I am 64, the 29th of April 2017 to the 28th of April 2018. Over. Finding Your 64 by Chris Kelly. Jesus Christ, what time is it? The alarm clock blaring just out of reach. I uncomfortably rubbed the sleep from my eyes as I came to my senses. Oh, great, another birthday. But this one's different somehow. More ominous, depressing. This was the day I turned 64 years of age. Usually birthdays don't faze me. What's another year on the timeline after all? We all get older. And with 63 years of existence already in the bank, why should this one feel any different? The penny drops. McCartney. Paul fucking McCartney. He's why. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was released into the world in 1967, and along with it came the McCartney-penned sentimental ditty, When I'm 64. While a harmless enough little song on face value, by entering the collective consciousness during the latter part of the 20th century, it cemented an idea about the older generation that inadvertently sealed the fate of anyone over the age of 63. The refrain, "Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?" created the notion that those of us, as I have now, who reach the age of 64 are somehow now past it, beyond self-assertion, and have become reliant on others, an idea that now fills me with utter disdain. I'm only 64, I thought. I'm not past it. I'm not a candidate for help the aged. I'm just getting started. Formulating a plan, I decided to find something that would allow me to view my 64 in a new light, to reconfigure my thinking, to view it for what it is, what I make of it, and not what some old pop song suggests it would be. I would do something unanticipated, something that surprises even me. Eating my slightly overdone toast with a cup of tea that morning, I suddenly remembered an article I'd read on the Vietnam War. The article had focused on the demilitarized zone between North and South Vietnam during the war, situated on the 17th parallel, the circle of latitude 17 degrees north of the equator. This got me thinking. I wonder what's situated on the 64th parallel. Delving into the exciting world of latitude and longitude, my research for the 64th parallel led me to find that it runs through the colder climes of the Earth, just outside the Arctic Ocean. Not a great start, I thought, considering my bad knee to contend with, but I investigated further. The places I could choose to investigate included Canada, Russia, Norway, but then I spotted it. The answer! The 64th parallel also runs just south of Reykjavik in Iceland. This was my sign. As a much younger man, I had attempted and failed to walk across Iceland. As a slightly older man, I bought an expensive piece of art by someone who had succeeded in that very same mission I had failed all those years before. That story has been told elsewhere and won't be rehashed here, but its relevance cannot be underestimated. In my search to find a purpose for my 64th year, I found myself pointing right back to the start of my adulthood, like a proverbial compass pointing north. Now I had my endeavour. I was going to revisit Iceland as a 64-year-old man, to experience the 64th parallel. I had no idea what I'd find, or if I would find anything at all. But that wasn't important. I'd heard my call, and now it was time to follow it. During my planning, along with the usual monotony of searching for flights and accommodation, I found some new information on the 64th parallel running through Iceland. As it happens, along the parallel is an area of distinct volcanic, geothermal and seismic activity. Armed with this information, I plan the final stages of my trip. Alone, I travel to Reykjavik and make my way to one of those regions. A man with fire in my belly, re-evaluating my own age within the world. By making an expedition to an area where the surface of the world itself was created by its very own fire-filled belly. How very apt. Nearing the airport as the plane began our descent for landing, I watched as the spectacular landscape below me came into view. I've been here before, so this wasn't a new experience. But this time was different. I could feel a connection. Cold hits you like a brick in Iceland. But even the bitter drop in temperature couldn't slow me down. I immediately got checked into my hotel and searched through the excursion pamphlets in the welcome folder. I found my target. Þrínuskagi, or something like that. A dormant volcano about 20 minutes south of Reykjavik. I booked onto the next excursion. I could feel, as we travelled in the minibus, the young backpackers in my group had obvious doubts about my ability to make the hike across the lava field to the welcome cabin. This gave me even more determination. Their worldview of me as an old man was exactly what I was here to dispel. Entering the volcano, the guide explained to us that the enormous chamber we were walking into was once full of the fiery magma of an active volcano, which had since disappeared. He explained that this was exceptional and an anomaly. The magma had left, but the chamber remained. Naturally, this was an amazing sight to any visitor, but as I stood in that vast expanse, I felt contented, fulfilled. Unbeknownst to me, back on my birthday, this is exactly what I had needed to find. Surrounded by something so ancient, a shell of its former power and glory, but still powerful enough to trigger amazement and respect from those who encounter it. I was at one with the volcano. Neither of us as volatile as we had once been in our youth, but we can't be discounted. We maintain a distinct, albeit different, value in our older years. This was it. I'd found my 64.
Under. Dead Signet in My Rucksack by Phil Eaglesham. It's April 27th, 2017, and I stared out at the waterlogged view of stalagmites at low tide. A periscope rises silently in midstream Clyde, as heralded by the wee minesweeper I spotted as I drove and walked to this outcrop. I imagined the wire mesh barrier from wartime defences, rotted in pieces on the bed of the Firth, where Hess had bailed his microsub in a futile grail quest. This reassuring bank of ragwort-infested land is partitioned by the motorway to protect the grazing beasts opposite and the equestrian centre up the hill. More's the pity. To my west, the wood for long-gone sugar boats I dreamt of steering was seasoned here, despite their strange cargo. Salted, semi-rotted, and renewed till ready for assembly. Oh, fuck, another pound-shop metaphor and a brain clang. Just fucking stop. It's just wood and water and oor-wully Wulberforce. They'd upgraded the dogging car park, I see. Tax dollars spent on the erotic no-man's land between local Trumptonesque civic authorities. I'd escaped my tribunal appeal at last, and it had been grueling and stomach-churning. Not in a reptilian, there's a second brain down there kind of vibe, don't you worry. The time had thankfully run out on the Mental Health Act section enforcement, which had soaked up too sizable a chunk of my year to date. It had messed with my mojo and cramped my travelling style for sure. The world tour was the thread that kept the whole random set of actions in some sort of cat's cradle in my head. West Bengal was a blur of soup, cake and bed-making, with some temple tank bathing to scrub off the caste oppression I'd witnessed and tried to traverse as I'd recorded a version of True to the Trail. I made it back from Calcutta just in time for a quiet Christmas in the county asylum. Snatched by the bastard squad at the airport and shuffled into a pristine mental health facility, all because I published a Discordian call to arms, albeit nail-gunned to the gatepost of Windsor Castle. These fuckers don't need Largactyl or Haldol any more to quash us. A few tweets, enough retweets, and the psyche squad descent on you like starved hyenas. You find your true friends and allies when you're incarcerated and disavowed, but it's the clearinghouse I'd weirdly needed. Too many barnacles on the ship's bow, sailing wonky for too long. Now the path was as clear as the diagonal view before me to the nuclear submarine base at Faslane. I took a generous sip from the baby bio bottle, which I'd warmed up in my jacket pocket, and this time congratulated myself on a metaphor well and truly ridden rough. A microsecond flash and the squall of seagulls clamouring for entrails thrown from a fishing boat across the tide turn into day-glow flying skeletons. The water pulses. Some weird neutron leak again from the toxic Holy Loch debris or the death base up at Loch Long. Nuclear Holocaust was back on the agenda since those zombie fuckers turned their back on the rest of Europe and began their meta-ritual flag shag. Mass nihilism, regurgitated locally by Daily Express-fueled bylaws intent on retribution. It was a summer of social slurry, floating like half-digested plum duff puke on the canal under Spaghetti Junction, which I'd made into my lair. Micron-thick layers of paint building up slowly as each of my rant and raves were plastered and photographed, covered up black for the winter. Several missed calls. My phone had politely alerted me 'twas Sardinia's Day and or Scampi Day, but spring can't raise a sap despite a recent obsessive fad diet of noon and night fish protein. I'd had enough of shitting behind rural bus shelters in emergencies, not a good look for an elderly gentleman, however lush and scented the Kleenex were in the left-hand pocket. Incontinence equals death. The vulture insurers in the City of London feasted on the primal fear of the rich and poor in equal measure. But roll out the coffee and bourbon crumbs for the richest. They need to take a good fucking look at themselves. This isn't Thebes, for fuck's sake. I'd become fucking Anubis, however, of late, it seemed. Obituary, obligatory. Uh-oh, Azrael, licensed to kill a rock and roll wake, stone dead. With words, the right and wrong ones, not unlike my lost comrade-in-arms, Pete Burns, whose implosion, deliberate Liverpool reference and metaphor, had deeply saddened me. Pete's non-binary Jim Morrison meets Ethel Merman wail reached out from a pyramid gathering dust in a Victoriana arcade. I wasn't close enough to him to say much more than that, and Liverpool was 100 lifetimes ago. In Egyptology terms, obviously. I've become a mummified, layered cadaver of care, don't care, won't care, desperate to please, and sheer shitting the bed terror to be liked. I'd ended up seduced again into being a gobshite again on some kind of rock family trees corporate documentary on a London punk ritual burning shite everyone clamoured for. My punk's not dead moment. I'd got fuck all more to say on the matter. Certainly nothing profound. In my heart, I knew this was part of the mind war unleashed to section me and ultimately silence me. It felt like McLaren had reached out from beyond the grave and Reed's hippie tendencies became my nemesis. To be fair, I deserved to be so manipulated trying to get Jamie and Margie back together through a combination of mushrooms and alcoholic sabotage. The Finnish vodka I knew she had a taste for, a clutch of wavy caps, and a shitload of weaponized nostalgia to get them enticed. My plan foiled by simple confusion on dosage, and my inbuilt self-destruction resulted in another crazed secret mission. Windsor Castle then became my occult obsession. Lines had converged there, my pish boiling. An avian flu-ridden dead cygnet in my rucksack. Yours sincerely, wasting away.